Hello, and welcome back to another episode of DD Geopolitics. I am your host, Sarah, from Seattle, and here is Chris from an undisclosed secret location. Chris, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I like when my co-host shows up and he's like, I'm here. And you're like, oh, okay. Like Carmen Sandiego.
You know, that was a great show.
It was a great show. Well, today we have lots to update on, but how are things in Moscow?
Things in Moscow are good. Things in the multipolar world are good. And it seems that, the world keeps turning and maybe we're getting closer to World War III. Maybe not. We'll see.
I think we are. Well, in the unipolar world, we're in collapse. But we're still trying to hold on with our dear life, like in Georgia. So in Georgia, we have massive protests. Well, they're not that massive. But guys, keep in mind that 80% of the media in Georgia is owned by Soros, that's Moldova. I think it's a little bit less, but it's still like 30 or 40%, like Soros type. So here's what's a little update. Love the music that our producer chooses. Like, that is not the music that should be. It's a protest. It should have been like the Benny Hill theme or something. So the EU American sympathizer crowd descended upon the capital of Georgia. I think some got confused, thought they were in the state of Georgia. You see some United States flags. When will this end? I mean, the mayor of Georgia is part of the Georgian Dream Coalition. I don't know if he's a party member, but he's definitely part of the coalition. And he was elected, I think, about 40% of the vote. So close to the majority. I mean, when will all of this end?
It won't end. I mean, I was on RT earlier tonight and was speaking to our colleagues. And I basically said this has been an ongoing situation and issue for decades. This was also Brzezinski's plans. This was the plans of the neocons. And of course, we cannot forget that Georgia and Russia went to war in 2008, long before Ukraine. There was already a military operation done in the Caucasus because, of course, there were issues surrounding Abkhazia, South Ossetia. And then, of course, overall, Georgia's trajectory under Saakashvili to come within the camp and orbit of NATO and the European Union. Part of the ongoing hybrid war against the Russian Federation, and of course, part of the encirclement plans of NATO. So it's not going to end. You can clearly, NATO has an informational office in Tbilisi. I've seen it. It has an EU office. I mean, there is a faction of the Georgian ruling class and a part of the population who really and sincerely believe that Georgia would be better off joining NATO and plunging their country back into war than to be neighborly with European countries and with the Russian Federation and other Caucasus countries. I think it's absolute insanity. Our good good friends are also on the ground there. I spoke with Shea Bose as well, and he was saying that it was absolute mayhem for parts of the time in the streets, just chaos over there. And he was doing a report for RT. But I think that one thing is clear. These ongoing hybrid regime change operations, what we saw, these fomenting of protests, which, by the way, the EU did not come out and condemn. I love when they condemn, for example,
right, ripping down barricades, assaulting police officers, burning up private property.
Not only that, they ripped down the gates and the fences of the presidential palace. I mean, this isn't just a government building. This is the presidential palace. So I think that it shows the level. And you saw in that video clip, people are tear gassing journalists. There's definitely a fomenting of chaos there. And it's done with the exact goal to try to destabilize the government and, of course, to bring about a Georgian Maidan. But I don't think the Georgian people want that in the majority. I think so.
I want to remind our viewers to go back and watch our previous stream. We talked about Moldova. It's obviously part of this sort of encirclement of Russia. And if you go and you looked on X, you would have thought that the Georgians were fighting for, I don't even know, their dignity. I'm not sure. The message was very unclear. But let's take a look at who was responsible for it. Our producer went down a few rabbit holes. Music, like everything feels so intense. It's just scrolling LinkedIn. But anyway, I'm so hyped for the NED. But obviously, the usual suspects, the State Department, NED, and you guys know that USAID was what was taken away. It all just got placed behind the State Department, and NED is still fully functional. So it's just the same group of characters. But what also happened, and I don't know if you were paying attention in your travels, is that a populist, not so pro-EU candidate won in, or party won in Czech Republic. What went on there?
In the Czech Republic, they have a new leader who is someone who's already said that he's going to cut funding off from Ukraine. He's not going to participate in this. And he's much more aligned with Orban and Fico in Slovakia. I mean, we have a massive sea change within the European Union. Now you have three major countries and leaders who are saying that they do not want to continue on with this aggression. They do not want this war to continue on, and they don't want to cut their ties wholeheartedly with the Russian Federation. I mean, this is a very bad day for Ursula von der Leyen and her crew in Brussels.
Interesting, interesting. But we still do have the loss of Moldova for now.
For now.
Anyway. So all on the heels of this week, we have Russia is responding to a lot of comments verbally and physically. Here's I guess you'll have to hear the song one more time. Sorry.
That's about the 15th explosion I've heard so far. Lviv is currently undergoing the largest aerial attack since the beginning of the war in Ukraine. There are reportedly 700 of these Russian kamikaze drones in the sky flying all over the country right now.
I can't with this music, but that's the last time you'll have to hear it anyway. Those are That was Dick Woodruff, British mercenary living in Lviv. Finally, some large-scale strikes on military and industrial complexes in Lviv. That's the hangout of all of the mercenaries. What do you think about? Then look at this strike map. Holy
Mother of God. Russia's on the move. I gotta say, in the words of the illustrious Pete Hegseth, F-A-F-O. So I just want to say, you know, they started this and now they're coming to learn what the Russian Federation is capable of. Maybe you shouldn't have bombed everybody in the Donbass since 2014 and banned this and banned that and killed that person and imprisoned those people. I mean, come on. It's just a matter of time.
Putin warned everyone. A few people were freaking out about his comments at Valdai. We're going to go through some of those clips, but he did say in one, I don't think I uploaded it, but he said the response from Russia will come. And it will come. And everybody's like, what are you talking about?
Of course. Of course. Russia, let's be honest, Russia has been very, very restrained in this special military operation. Russia has firepower far greater than it has shown. But of course, Russians see the people in Ukraine, not as enemy people, obviously. So they don't want this mass devastation, unlike the Zionists who see everybody but themselves as being worthy of genocide. So I think that we can understand that Russia is a responsible state actor involved in ongoing military operations to defend its people and to destroy a regime that is, you know, hell-bent on its destruction next door. That's how I see it. I think that's how we are beginning to understand where this is headed.
So it looks like they struck a few industrial parks, a lubricant supply center, robotics, warfare systems, missiles, facilities under the Brave One program, which is a foreign-backed program. Lots of stuff, great stuff that they hit. And then we'll take some clips of this this speech in Valdai. It was 4 hours long he spent. What leader is spending 4 hours giving a speech and then answering questions from the audience?
Listen, it's a league of their own. Putin, Xi Jinping, Fidel Castro, may he rest in peace. Those ones are the ones that really do it. Lukashenko does it.
Lukashenko does do it.
So these are the only ones that really do it to this level. And that's why there are people.
So, I mean, yeah. I mean, well, I watched all of it, so you guys don't have to. But let's go through some of my favorite moments.
Никакой бы потенциал не накопила отдельная страна или группа стран. У всякой мощи все-таки есть предел. Ну, российская сторона, аудитория знает. Есть такое у нас в народе выражение. Против лома нет приема, кроме другого лома. А он всегда появляется, понимаете? В этом суть происходящих событий в мире. Всегда. Он всегда появляется.
Explain to the Westerners what he means when he's... There's no...
It's a very polite way of basically saying F-A-F-O. You know? The basic concept is, if you come at me with a weapon, then a weapon you will receive. You know, those who, you know, we have the classic saying, if you pick up the sword, you'll perish by the sword. You know, then every variation of it from there, right? Live by the sword, die by the sword, however you like to use it. That's the essence is, we didn't start this. In fact, we went twice to join NATO. You all wanted this, now you got it.
Of course, Putin had to respond to the paper tiger comment.
Но если мы воюем со всем блоком НАТО и так двигаемся, продвигаемся, уверенно себя чувствуем, и, значит, это бумажный тигр, что тогда сама НАТО? Она что тогда из себя представляет? Но бог с ним. Нам самое главное быть уверенными в себе, а мы в себе уверены.
Спасибо. Есть такие детские вот вырезать и собирать тигры бумажные. Вы тогда президенту Трампу, когда будете встречаться, подарите.
Да нет, у нас с ним свои, свои отношения, мы там знаем, что друг другу дарить. Но мы к этому относимся, знаете, очень, очень спокойно. Я не знаю, в каком бы контексте это было сказано, как с иронией, может быть, было сказано.
We have our own gifts to give them.
I love it. It reminds me, listen, as a historian and a foreign policy, you know, person who did studies, I think one of the great sayings was when Kissinger went to, or Nixon went to China, I think it was with one of them. And Mao basically said, okay, you know, in our press, we're going to have to say bad things about you and you and your press, but we'll find solution to everything else. This is sort of how Putin understands the situation as well. Okay, maybe he said it in one way, ironic, I don't know, but that there it is. That's the big tiger. That's the big tiger. Everybody knows. Everybody knows.
Well, there were about 700 drones in the skies of Ukraine last night. None went into Europe, but that won't stop the drone hysteria, which Putin thankfully called out at Valdai.
Владимир Владимирович, а зачем вы в Данию столько дронов посылаете?
Не буду больше.
Не надо больше.
Больше не буду. Не буду больше ни во Францию, ни в Данию, ни в Копенгаген. Куда еще ты летаешь?
Да везде долетают.
Да, в Лиссабон и куда они летают. Вы знаете, там развлекаются люди, которые когда-то развлекались по поводу неопознанных летающих объектов, НЛО. Но там столько чудаков, как и у нас, кстати говоря. Как, да, ничем не отличается, особенно молодые люди. Там они сейчас будут запускать вам каждый день. Каждый день, боже мой. Вот и пусть ловят там все это. Значит, ну, как вы понимаете, если серьезно, у нас и дронов-то нет, которые до Лиссабона долетают. Но есть определенные и большой дальности, но... Целей там нету, что самое-то главное. Вот в общем дело. Но это тоже один из способов нагнетания обстановки в целом, чтобы выполнить указания Вашингтонского обкома и повысить расходы на оборону.
There you have it, Westerners.
I'm going to say, watch out, because I can imagine another weather balloons 2.0, where there's going to be some observational balloon that lands. They're going to say, oh, it was Russia, like they did about China, and they shot it down. You remember that? They shot down the
might be balloon. Psychic, because Lithuania closed their airspace because there were balloons flying over the border with cigarettes. Probably coming from Russia or Belarus.
I love it.
The cheap cigarettes.
You can't make this shit up. I'm telling you, you can't make it up. You can't make it up.
The fake drones and the balloons aren't going to stop them from... We're getting ready for a repeat.
You know.
Внимательно следим за набирающей силу милитаризации Европы. Просто ли это слова, либо нам пора принимать ответные меры. Вот мы слышим же, и вы знаете об этом. ФРГ, например, говорит о том, что немецкая армия должна быть опять самый мощный в Европе. Ну, хорошо. Мы внимательно это слушаем, смотрим, чего же там, что имеется в виду. Думаю, ни у кого нет сомнений.
What do you think? Like, I feel like, even in, and we'll get more to this later, but like, I feel like there's a lot of like, you're just up to your old tricks because you kind of know what works. So are we just going to see a rearmament of Germany in the hope that this does escalate into that? I mean, even Vucic came out this week and said, everybody's preparing for war. It's just a question of which side are you on? I should have uploaded that video, but nobody wants to hear Vucic speak, really. But he did say that, coming from someone in the Balkans, especially Serbia, I think that that's quite critical.
No, absolutely. I mean, everybody's been talking about it now for some months. I've been privy to a lot of these conversations. But I think that one of the greatest dangers, and one thing that, I don't know, our grandparents were thinking about, and even Stalin himself was having nightmares about, was the rearmament and remilitarization of Germany. Always, Germany was seen as a powerful Central European country, as the most, as the linchpin of the Western bloc, so to speak, and the one where aggression always stemmed. And they have the discipline, I mean, okay, maybe not now as much, but they had the discipline, they had the technological prowess and things like that, which were the hallmarks of German industrialism and militarism. Now, I think that it's very important to recognize for Putin, and I think for many in Russia, as in the Balkans, who experienced Austrian and by extension German aggression in the Second World War, is rearming Germany is like a red line. Nobody ever wanted this. Okay, they had an army, but it was, you know, just for a show. They didn't really do much. They helped with NATO operations here, there, peacekeeping. But it was not a rearmament at the levels that we haven't seen since Cold War and before Cold War, since the Second World War. They're talking about building tanks, airplanes, buying airplanes, drones, you name it. I think that the rearmament is going to open Pandora's box of some of the greatest fears of the diplomats, of the politicians, of the military leaders of the 20th century, and even into the even the 19th century, where the rise of Prussia as a power, and then going into World War I. I mean, this is a country that had been at the core of multiple world wars and regional conflicts. So I think that Russia is concerned about this. Russia is very concerned about this because, let's not forget, the German army on its own is one thing, but there has always been a call by French and German intellectuals to have, and politicians, to have a European army. They said the combination of German power and French power, and by extension, all the other Europeans who are going to be cannon fodder, would be the creation of a European army to confront Russia. That's always been the fantasy. It's also the fantasy of Macron and some of these. They talked about it over the past few years. We cannot forget that in 2018, I went to a conference in Ireland, anti-NATO one, and there was a big presentation about European rearmament and a European wide army. They called us conspiracy theories. You know, they called us conspiracy theorists and that all of these were conspiracy theories. The truth is, that's actually what's happening now.
Wild. Well, what else do you think about Putin said about the Tomahawk comment. He said, if they do give Tomahawks to Ukraine, that will have an effect on our relationship with the United States. I think that's what he said. I don't know if he said negative effect. I think he's kept it neutral. But what amount of relationship is left between the two of them to sever? What did he mean? What do you think?
Listen, I mean, we have the good cop, bad cop. We have Medvedev and Kirill Dmitriev playing both sides, you know, the angel and the demon, you know. And
yeah, so
you
angel.
For the U.S., the palatability of their comments. But I think what's really important is that the acquisition of Tomahawks is one thing. The deployment of them on the battlefield and the use of them to strike strategic targets or to strike fear and terror in the hearts of ordinary Russian civilians inside Russia will be another red line. How Russia will respond to that and whether it responds in Ukraine proportionally, we'll see. But I think that it will definitely escalate the tensions and the situation. There's no doubt about it. Already people are very concerned. I've had people who are not political in Russia message me on Telegram and say, I'm concerned about the Tomahawks and the submarines. I said, well, you know, we should be worried, but also we should know saber rattling. It's always part of the equation. But if the Tomahawks are used and Zelensky wants to target the Kremlin, and he really wants to, symbolically, you remember that painting of the Kremlin burning?
The stamp.
Yes, that's what he wants. He wants the Kremlin. Symbolically, they want to strike at the heart of Russian power. If they are able to do that, which I don't know if they would get past the air defenses that are around Moscow, especially Tomahawks, you know, up against S-400s. We'll see. But I think if they're able to do that, I think all bets are off. I think the hardliners will win the day in that conversation.
I do hope so. I do hope so. I had something I was going to say, but now it left my brain. But for comparison purposes, I did cut this clip about Gaza.
Ситуация в Газе – это ужасное событие в истории, современной истории человечества. И даже известно, как прозападно ориентированный генеральный секретарь Организации Объединенных Наций господин Гутерреш сказал публично, что Газа превратилась в самое большое детское кладбище в мире. Ну что может быть более трагичным и печальным. Президента Трампа по Газе. Вы знаете, наверное, будет неожиданным для вас, но в целом Россия его готова поддержать. И если, конечно, мы внимательно должны посмотреть на сделанные предложения, если, конечно, это приведет к окончательной цели, о которой мы всегда говорили. Россия всегда, начиная с 1948 года, а потом и 1974, когда была принята соответствующая резолюция Совета Безопасности ООН, выступала за создание двух государств – и Израиля, и палестинского государства. И в этом, на мой взгляд, заложен залог окончательного решения палестино-израильского конфликта. Очень важно, и, на мой взгляд, это точно следует поддержать. Речь идет о том, чтобы освободить всех заложников, которые удерживают Хамас, с одной стороны, и выпустить из израильских тюрем значительное количество палестинцев. Здесь тоже надо понять, о каком количестве палестинцев, кого, в какие сроки можно выпустить. И, конечно, вы знаете, самый главный вопрос, как к этому относится сама Палестина. Вот это точно совершенно нужно понять. И страны региона, весь исламский мир и сама Палестина. Вот сами палестинцы. Имею в виду, конечно, и Хамас. У нас там к Хамас по-разному относятся. И у нас свое отношение есть. Но у нас есть контакты с Хамас. И для нас важно, чтобы и Хамас тоже это поддержал. И администрация...
Inclusion of Hamas. That's why I included it. I thought that was incredibly interesting. That, and he also called Gaza the world's largest children's cemetery. That Russia's ready to support Trump's peace proposal in principle, but only if it leads to the resolution of a two-state solution. I thought that this was really interesting. I don't know that any other world leader came out and said Hamas needs to be included in the considerations, et cetera, et cetera.
Not any other world leader outside of the Axis of Resistance.
Right.
So I think, yes, of course, but China hasn't necessarily said it openly, but they, of course, had Hamas officials during the negotiations in China. And Russia, of course, has had even, Dr. Bassem Naim, who went to Moscow for consultations with the Russian Ministry of Foreign Affairs and the presidential administration regarding what was the ongoing genocide in Gaza. It's important to note there, you mentioned children. Can you compare Putin at Valdai with Van Jones on Bill Maher? I mean...
Tell our viewers what happened. I don't have the clip, but tell our viewers what happened on
In summary, Van Jones tried to change how we perceive all of the images of dead babies on social media as somehow an Iranian-Qatari disinformation campaign. Yeah. As if, to use the word of the Hasbara crew, this is all Pallywood. All of these dead children are all Pallywood, that this is all disinformation. And he said it smug-faced and smiling. That, oh, we just scroll and we see dead children, dead children, dead children, Diddy, dead children, dead children, dead children. You know, for me, that was so shocking and horrifying, coming from somebody who once claimed to be on the left, who once, with his, prestigious educational background, was an activist, right? But you see these turncoats and how they went from being a principled activist to being somebody, I won't get into the graphic detail, but clearly in a financial relationship with the Zionist entity. And in that way, you can see that Putin here doesn't mince words. The Israelis have turned Gaza into the largest children's cemetery in the world. And that's important because in the Donbass, they have children's cemeteries everywhere for the crimes committed by the Ukro-Nazis, right? And they have alleyways for the children and their memory. So you can clearly see that it's important for the Russian sensibility that children are being murdered en masse when they are innocent, right? So I think that it's very important. I think what Putin said, of course, shows Russia is still a major diplomatic force and will continue to try to balance both, of course, the large Russian-speaking population in Israel with the longstanding support for Palestine, the Arab world, and the Islamic world.
I did like, yeah, he did say the Islamski Mir. Islamski Mir. That contrasts to Trump, because Trump came out 2 days ago, and here is his last chance Truth Social post. I always want to call them tweets, but I think they're called truths. Okay. Around 10 a.m. at Trump's time, he posted this, boasting that 25,000 Hamas fighters have been killed. They're surrounded and trapped. They want a peace deal by Sunday, 6 p.m. Washington time, or face all hell like no other has ever been seen before. This spares the lives of all remaining Hamas fighters, which I don't understand why anybody in Israel would go for that. And we will have peace one way or the other. So that came out on October 3rd. I want to remind all of our viewers, in April of 2024, it was found out that Hamas offered these hostages on the 9th or the 10th, and they were declined, just so Israel could enter the Strip. So
this was the whole plan all along. Yeah. That's why Israeli media is melting down. People don't know what's going on. The coalition partners, including Ben-Gvir and Smotrich, are probably, their heads are exploding right now, because now they realize
they've been played,
so to speak, unless this is some 5-6D chess that we don't know, another Iranian scenario where they're going to play like everybody's disagreeing with each other and secretly they're going to go in and hammer the final nails in this coffin. I don't know. I can't force, if I had a crystal ball, we would all be in a better place.
But exactly what is happening. Smotrich and Ben-Gvir don't want the hostage deal. They don't want the hostage deal at all.
And I think, there's so many layers here. Ben-Gvir and Smotrich and their crew don't want the hostage deal. Netanyahu knows that if the hostages are released, and then Israeli society will pressure him in some, I don't know if it's going to be sizable, we'll see. But there clearly is a plurality, if not a majority, that want to see the hostages done, the hostages back. And I think that many, after that point comes, would want to see a ramp down and a cessation of the hostilities. We'll see. But what's interesting here is that Netanyahu knows that if this situation ends, he's back on criminal charges. He's back to maybe losing his coalition. He could be out of political power. He knows that it's existential for him to keep this going, for his political career and his power. So he's looking at this also in an egotistical, self-serving manner. I think that that's another dimension to this. But we're gonna end up seeing where this goes.
So then the evening of the 3rd, Hamas agrees to release all hostages, alive or dead, under this exchange formula, once field conditions allow. So they wanted a ceasefire. Now, just to remind viewers, which I'm sure they already know, Israel had been bombing and bombarding, drone striking throughout this entire process, because that's what they do. They agreed with 2 points out of the 20, and then wanted to start negotiating on the others. They accepted handing administration to a Palestinian technocratic body and wanted the ceasefire to be tied to a complete Israeli withdrawal from Gaza. Today, Trump warned that Hamas will face complete obliteration if it refuses to cede power in Gaza. And U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio reports that 90% of the Gaza deal details agreed, with only logistical issues pending, urging Israel to stop bombings upon agreement and stressing negotiations must be continued swiftly. This is what Trump had to say. Forgive me, it's the background noise is loud.
Are you open to flexibility on the Hamas plan?
We have very little, we don't need flexibility because everybody pretty much agreed to it, but there'll always be some changes. But the Hamas plan, I tell you, it's amazing. You're going to have peace, if you think about it, peace in the Middle East for the first time in, they say, really, 3,000 years. So I'm very honored to be a big part of that. Look, they've been fighting for a plan for years to get the hostages back almost immediately. Negotiations are going on right now. Will probably take a couple of days. And people are very happy about it.
Uh, First of all, it wasn't, you know, there's been point, you know, long durations of peace in the region as well.
You know, first of all, I would say 3,000 years.
FYI, I mean, it's been, you know, there have been moments where it has not been peaceful, but there have been moments where it has been more peaceful than not. So that's just, you know, that's for Trump's Nobel Peace Prize application, you know, for this this episode. 3,000 years, I ended the conflict and, you know, here we go, give me the Nobel. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, the flexibility here is the main question. If Rubio is to be believed, then what we are just trying to figure out is the logistical aspect. Some of the pending issues were when and how and where are the lines where the IDF will withdraw, and what's the order of operations for withdrawal? Are there going to be surveillance outposts still within the Strip's territory or outside? And I think that there are some other logistical stuff as to getting the bodies, getting the hostages out, how this happens, the Palestinian prisoners, really, you know, they're hostages as well in Zionist dungeons. So how that works out, I think, is part of the equation here. And the weapons. I this is an ongoing issue because we've got mixed reports about offensive versus defensive weapons.
Yeah, they won't be clear about what.
Correct. Correct. They're not necessarily clear about what that looks like. And I think it's important to note here that from some reporting we saw, Hamas in the Strip said they will give up their offensive but not their defensive weapons. Whereas Hamas outside the Strip said they'd be willing to give up their defensive weapons to a Palestinian leadership. So we'll see. I don't know. There's been mixed reporting. Who knows?
Then there were a lot of changes. And if you guys want to go over the changes, we went through them in detail on Wednesday. That stream's still very much relevant as everything keeps going. But here's where I start to crash out. Can we please stop doing this shit? Like, the last time we did this shit and we pretended these two were fighting, they bombed Iran. So can we just stop with this nonsense? Oh, they're fighting again. Oh, they're being mean to each other on the phone.
It reminds me of like a high school couple that purposely has fights just to kind of generate gossip about them. So the whole high school is talking about them all the time. But it's all for show. And they're, you know, they become by default the most popular people. I think it's hilarious, these tactics.
I love it. I love it. I just posted on the big account. I just screenshot it and said, they're going to bomb Iran again. Like when they do this dumb stuff where they're like, oh, we're in a rift, we're fighting. It means that somebody's getting ready to attack somebody again and they're trying to distance themselves from it.
I think so.
That's what's going on. Don't forget the Ford is moving into position, probably to the Red Sea. We'll see if it goes through the Suez or not. And the Nimitz is in position right now. So this is just ridiculous. Please stop buying into this stuff. At least if you're going to share it and say, this is fake news or this is bullshit. I'm sorry to keep making Chris talk about this because it's thankfully not affecting him, but he has escaped from the Matrix. But I have to keep talking about what is going on. This is becoming our regular segment, but we'll stick to Gaza. So I came across this article. Tony Blair is Larry Ellison's man in Gaza. Okay. I had no idea that these two were in cahoots, I guess you could call it. Early yesterday morning for me, it leaked documents revealed that Oracle billionaire Larry Ellison will be leading the new Gaza plan to build the free trade zone in the enclave under Tony Blair. Blair's think tank has been so deeply integrated with Oracle that even staff at Tony Blair Institute described it as operating like an Oracle dealership for Ellison's interests. Ellison gave the Tony Blair Institute $350 million to become integrated with Oracle and for this post-war Gaza plan. This shit is...
Yikes. It is definitely bananas. I think we lost Sarah for a bit, but hopefully she'll be back.
I got kicked somehow. It's the Zionist, attack.
Oracle.
It's Oracle. Anyway, here's the two of them hanging out.
because we we're constantly recording, watching and recording everything that's going on. Citizens will be on their best behavior because we're constantly recording and reporting everything that's going on.
The first thing a country needs to do is to unify all of their data so it can be consumed and used by the AI model. You have to take all of your healthcare data, your diagnostic data, your electronic health records, your genomic data. The NHS in the UK has an incredible amount of population data, but it's fragmented. It's not easily accessible by these AI models. We have to take all of this data we have in our country and move it into a single, if you will, unified data platform so we provide context. When we want to ask a question, we've provided that AI model with all the data they need to understand our country. So that's the big step. That's kind of the missing link. We need to unify all of the national data, put it into a database where it's easily consumable by the AI model, and then ask whatever question you like.
World Government Summit in 2025, hosted by Tony Blair, where Larry Ellison speaks to you from a 1984-esque screen. And now what happened recently is digital IDs in the United Kingdom. NHS has been fully taken over by the AI. People have been trying to get their hands on that data for years. So these two are going to be running the new Gaza. You feel warm inside yet?
I can tell you, I probably feel warm from the rockets flares that are going to go up in another 10 or 20 years, because that's just not sustainable and it cannot happen. They're going to turn it into a digital concentration camp. Forget about it. Okay, it's going to have short fences and things. It's going to have cameras everywhere. Didn't they say, wasn't there another clip that talked about every listening device is recording and you got to like be on your best behavior because they're all monitoring it all the damn time? I mean, and then these people, listen, these people have the gall to say China is an authoritarian, totalitarian, capitalist hellhole, and they have this social credit system. And there's nothing like that there. This is way worse than what they want to do. They don't even have this thing fully operational there. It's not even this way it's being portrayed. It's totally different. But this is complete domination. I mean, forget about Fahrenheit 451. We're getting into like Brave New World territory, you know. They're going to be putting your AirPods in and your headphones in at night, and you're going to be getting advertisements and consumer messaging. Really?
We're not there. We're getting there. The spoiler alert, we're getting there. Don't worry, Chris. It gets scarier. But anyways, okay, just so you guys know, Ellison and BB are the best of friends. We'll pull this graphic up again later. But there is no greater honor than supporting the Israeli military. He is the largest donor to the IDF, gave them $16.6 million. He's the largest private donor to the IDF. This isn't a conflict of interest. Why do you think Caroline Leavitt reacted the way she did when the reporter asked her, don't you think having Jared Kushner involved in this is a conflict of interest? They all have conflicts of interest.
Of course. You cannot not have a conflict of interest and be involved in this stuff. I mean, it's just, they're all enmeshed. They're all together because it's as George Carlin said, our wonderful sage, it's one big club and you ain't in it. You and I are not in it. And that's it. We're not in it. This is the situation that we're in today.
Also, Netanyahu vacations on Larry Ellison's private Hawaiian island. You guys might not know this, but this is what I've been saying in the spaces lately, is that we have a short-sightedness issue. Larry Ellison has been planning this takeover since 9/11. He was using 9/11 to do it. He was very big under Obama. That's when he gained a lot of his power. So these people have been planning this for 25 years, and we're just now starting to talk about it. That's an issue that, you know, you get you're a conspiracy theorist, you're this, you're that for years, and then it starts happening, and you're like, I was playing catch up because I was 15 years behind. You're 20 years behind, sort of thing. It's just really bad. We're going to keep going because now we're getting into the censorship segment that has become a regular on our show. Unfortunately, Israel has now got a $6 million contract with a U.S. firm, Clock Tower X, to train ChatGPT to be more pro-Israel. I use ChatGPT. kind of regularly, I guess. I've never noticed it being anti-Israel. Do you use it? Or you guys don't have it in Russia?
I don't use it, and I don't care to. I just go to the library and grab like 50 books and figure
it out.
Yeah, of course. Fuck that. I'm not going. Listen, if I let AI do it for me, pretty soon we're not going to know how to do footnotes, endnotes, research.
That's
nothing.
True. The citations. Yeah.
I don't mean to be a Luddite. It can be helpful, but everybody's got to be a critical thinker. They got to go to the sources. They got to go to the archives. Otherwise, they're going to control the archives. Just like the Mormon church controls genealogical data in America. Many people don't know.
Why do you think the Jews and the Mormons are such good friends?
I don't know. I'm all, you know, putting the hat on. I don't know.
Your construction paper hat. Well, this is Israel's $6 million Clock Tower X contract. This was revealed in a September 29th article. Clock Tower's goal will be to generate at least 50 million impressions per month with pro-Israel content. That's very low. You need to pump those numbers up. We get 50 million impressions like a week, and that's like a bad week. So very, very low. 80% of the output will be tailored to Gen Z audiences on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, podcasts, and broadcast outlets. In addition, Clock Tower will create websites and content designed to deliver GPT framing results, essentially training AI models like ChatGPT to frame topics more favorably toward Israel. They'll use Market Brew AI, which is a predictive SEO platform, to game Google and Bing rankings of pro-Israel narratives. This will be integrated into the Salem Media Network, and which is ran by Larry Elder and Laura Trump. Because why wouldn't it be? Salem Network's largest stakeholders are Donald Trump Jr. and Laura Trump. But that's not it. Who was Clock Tower ran by? Brad Parscale, who ran Trump's 2016 campaign in Cambridge Analytica. It like never, ever ends. And he's in charge of this.
I don't even know what to say. Like, they all are in on it. Everybody's in on it.
They are.
You know when we used to joke and say it's a bunch of people in a back room smoking cigars?
No, it really literally is.
It really is. I'm sorry.
And I also want to yell at everybody because this report came out recently. A Home for Hate. How anti-Semitism is reaching millions on X. Now, I think I know I've said it. I think I've said it with Nick Cruz. I'm sure Chris has said it. I know Mohammed has said it. A lot of us have said it. When the anti-Semitism, and I very much implore you guys to go through this report, because I remember people in January, February of 2024 saying that, wow, it's gotten really anti-Semitic lately. It's gotten like weird, like something's changed. There's a vibe shift. They pushed anti-Semitism starting in the winter of 2024 so they could run reports like this one. So now we have a whole entire like 80-page report of the anti-Semitism on X and how popular it was. So good job, everybody. Not to mention, who the hell knows if the engagement with it's organic or not? Who knows if the original poster was botting the post, or if Israel was botting the post itself? But they have millions of data points to go off of now, because everybody was like, free speech, Elon's let us. You're stupid. You should never, ever believe the empire is going to give you a leash that long.
No way.
And not jerk it back when they need it.
Oh, come on.
Larry Ellison's been planning for 20 years. You think 2 years ago they weren't like, let's let these idiots get anti-Semitic online.
Let's foment it.
Yeah. And now look at us. So here's the categories of anti-Semitism. And this is why it's an issue. Because Jewish control conspiracy theories, right? Conspiracies that Jewish people control or possess excessive power over media, finance, or politics is in the same category as Jewish satanic conspiracy theories. So you and I sitting here having a conversation about how we're a little worried about Larry Ellison having so much control and power and holding so much power over our media is in the same boat as Jewish satanic conspiracy theories and blood libel? Do you see how this is, where this is going, to where a genuine concern turns into like, you're saying Jews poison wells? And it's like, I'm not near that. And that's what happens, is they kind of group us all together, people that have legitimate questions. And now we're stuck with people who say Jews are rats or roaches, something that I would never, ever say, or Holocaust denialism. So me and Chris asking about Larry Ellison controlling everything is akin to Holocaust denial.
I just want to say, I have an echo. Well, that's okay. You can hear me twice.
Right? No, I don't hear an echo. You're fine.
I hear an echo, but it's okay. The main thing is this. They want to constrict the speech around issues, not only Larry Ellison, around Epstein, Silverstein, Ghislaine Maxwell, Robert Maxwell. I mean, all of these powerful figures who, they are Jewish, but we're not saying that there's like a Jewish conspiracy and a Jewish cabal. We're not saying that. But we are saying that there is a disproportionate amount of power held by these individuals who are able to influence certain policies and politics and strategic thinking for some of the most major and important countries in the world, that then use that power to inflict mass devastation and surveillance upon people. I think that we have every right to ask questions.
Exactly.
Whether it's Jews, Christians, Muslims, Buddhists, atheists, agnostics, I don't care. I don't care who it is. We need to ask those questions. We need to be looking and searching for this. I mean, that's just the fact. And now this is going to be used to basically lump us all together and to say we're no different than those people who are putting pictures of SS and saying how great they were at Auschwitz, Treblinka, and Mauthausen. We're not like that. The Red Army liberated them.
Exactly. And that's what grouping us all together. That's that was kind of a goal in grouping us all together, or allowing people to kind of go off the deep end and then be like, look at these crazy anti-Semites. They're screaming about red cows, right? It's easy to make those people look crazy, even though we all know about the red heifer. But regardless, anyway, they use ChatGPT to go through Twitter. And then I guess they realized it wasn't good enough, so now they're changing ChatGPT. But regardless, they used ChatGPT to go through the posts, and then they came out with this report, which, again, I highly, highly recommend you go through. We have another report that I'm going to highly – there's a lot of homework. Sorry. But you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Necessary.
It's necessary. Okay, so once the leak came out about Larry Ellison, we've had a lot of leaks about Larry Ellison lately, but I found this video, and I'm going to – it's long, but I'm going to play the whole thing because it scared me, and if I suffer – everyone has to suffer. So just watch this.
It's my honor to welcome three of the world's leading technology CEOs. And in the case of Larry Ellison, it's well beyond technology, sort of CEO of everything.
Larry Ellison has officially surpassed Mark Zuckerberg to become the world's second richest person, with a net worth of $251.2 billion.
Clearly, you're saying whatever they decide he's doing is okay with me.
It's great. I wish, it's great. It's essential. By the way, President Obama thinks it's essential.
I have been to Israel. I have been to the border. I have spent time to the people who govern the state of Israel. I feel a deep emotional connection to the state of Israel and the Israeli people.
the police will be on their best behavior, because we're constantly recording, watching and recording everything that's going on. Citizens will be on their best behavior because we're constantly recording and reporting everything that's going on. And but we transmit the video back to headquarters. So headquarters and AI is constantly monitoring the video.
Together, these world-leading technology giants are announcing the formation of Stargate. So put that name down in your books.
Thank you, Mr. President. We certainly couldn't do this without you. Once we gene sequence that cancer tumor, you can then vaccinate the person, design a vaccine for every individual person to vaccinate them against that cancer. And you can make that vaccine, that mRNA vaccine, you can make that robotically, again using AI, in about 48 hours.
Thank you, Blunts for Jesus, whoever you are. But that was a great edit.
I have nightmares now.
I know.
I already have nightmares.
But it threw me down a rabbit hole. And there's been some great reporting that's been coming out this week, especially when in regards to Larry Ellison. I believe this came from Drop Site News, who obviously is holding the line, the email leak. So now we're finding out. Now, this were rumors. I believe Max Blumenthal and a few others had said, you know, I think even Ray McGovern said, you know, Israel vetted our cabinet. Well, these emails are from 2015 during Rubio's presidential bid, his back in 2015. Larry Ellison was tasked by Ron Proser, who at the time was the Israeli ambassador to the UN. Now he's the Israeli ambassador to Germany. Larry was tasked with vetting Marco Rubio to make sure his allegiance to Israel was sufficient. How was the conversation with Marco Rubio? Did he pass your scrutiny? Did you have a chance to talk about Israel? Great meeting with Marco Rubio. I set him up to meet with Tony Blair. I set him up to meet with Tony Blair. Marco will be a great friend for Israel. Why is this like an incestuous revolving door of the same like 1,000 people? Shortly after that dinner, Ellison held a fundraiser for Rubio at his California mansion, funneled $5 million into Rubio's super PAC. And then obviously Rubio has turned into what we see today. He was also, if you recall, during the Senate hearings, he was central to disparaging TikTok and getting it out of Chinese hands. That was for Larry Ellison. Larry Ellison has been planning a TikTok takeover for almost a decade, since the thing's inception. So we have Susie Wiles, who is Benjamin Netanyahu's campaign manager. Like, it never ends. Like, it really doesn't end with these people. We have what's his face, Ratcliffe takes notes from the Mossad. Like, it's just, and we knew Rubio was a maniacal Zionist. I just didn't know that he was being vetted by the owner of Oracle.
Have you seen anything about Ellison or any of his crew in terms of relationship with Epstein?
I looked. It's hard. These people are very dark, like the Oracle people. It's very hard to get information about Larry. There's been crossovers and overlaps, but there's nothing that's... there's nothing. But these rich, rich people, they all know each other.
There's no way that Epstein was hanging out with Ehud Barak and Ellison wasn't in the picture somewhere.
Exactly.
Not to mention, Epstein was financing a lot of these things through his own foundations and businesses. He helped to finance, wasn't it Ackerman's wife?
I was going to say, it puts a degree of separation, because even when you're looking for, if you go and ask ChatGPT or even Grok, if you say, can you find me ties between Bill Ackman and Jeffrey Epstein? It'll say no, because it puts that nice layer of separation. They Jeffrey Epstein funded his wife's PhD through one of his subsidiaries. Yeah.
Yeah. And multiple things and multiple, you know, programs at MIT. By the way, some of which were working on this stuff as well, or subsidiaries of it, connected in technologies.
Exactly. And then this came out this week. There's this guy doing great work over at Responsible Statecraft, Nick Cleveland Stout. Highly recommend him. Really coming out with some great stuff. I reached out to him. Hopefully we can get him on the show. But comes out with this article letting us know that if you don't love Israel, you can't work at Oracle. And people that express, you know, differing views are being hauled off to mental health services.
Yikes. We're going to be put in insane asylums for criticizing Israel pretty soon.
Exactly. That's what I'm thinking right now. This is at Oracle, who now controls a great deal of the world. This is their old CEO. She's still very much involved. When you connect with Oracle, you understand that we are committed to the U.S. and Israel. We are not flexible regarding our mission, and our commitment to Israel is second to none. This is a free world, and I love my employees, and if they don't agree with our mission to support the state of Israel, then maybe we aren't the right company for them. Larry and I are publicly committed to Israel and devote personal time to the country, and no one should be surprised by that. Goes on. This is what happens after October 7th. Obviously, they put up Stand with Israel, but I thought it was interesting to point out that they said it was very important for us to make sure we made a powerful message about how important Israel is and what the difference is between good and evil. Why are executives at Oracle determining what's good and evil?
They're going to be, they're turning into like a techno religion. I mean, this is like,
exactly.
This is scary stuff. Scary stuff. I'm telling you.
One more from the guy who runs Oracle in Israel. I couldn't fathom a global company offering more support to Israel than Oracle. Oracle's leadership, including the fact that Larry himself has an Israeli origin, has consistently demonstrated unequivocal support for Israel, so much so that employees not aligning with support for Israel may find that Oracle isn't the right fit. So they're being fired or kind of forced out. If you guys want to check out more of that, there is a group of staff under the pseudonym Oracle for Palestine, and they're on Substack, and they're revealing a lot of this stuff that goes on at Oracle with people who are not so much speaking out, but maybe just asking questions and getting kind of referred to mental health services of the company. I guess you're mental if you don't agree with how, with Israel.
I just want to say, like, I've been thinking a lot these past few years. I've been thinking a lot about what Ted Kaczynski wrote about and about some of the eco. You remember the Earth Liberation Front, which was tied with the Animal Liberation Front and all these groups. I honestly believe that if this continues, you might see a new wave of sort of Luddite environmental pro-humanist terrorism or freedom fighters or whatever they're going to, you know, how we're going to categorize them. But you're going to see, for example, because these technologies require energy, you're going to see greater attacks on energy grids, substations, computer hubs, and server centers and things like that. And we might actually see electromagnetic weapons being employed, because basically I think that some will out there will think it would be better to shut down the entire system than to let these things continue. Because these, it's so funny. Wasn't it that the last installment for Mission Impossible, where they had this crazy program, AI program, and they have to now save the world? Now here it is. The CIA created this, you know, fucking thing with all these intelligence services. Now they have to save the world from it, because now it has a mind of its own and it's turning into some, it's going to launch all the nuclear weapons at each other. But this stuff is becoming more and more not out of the realm of possibility.
No. You know, things are getting bad when even Rebar makes a graphic about it.
Oh, yeah.
If Rebar takes notice, then we know things are getting really bad. Look at this. And if you guys notice over there on the right, that's David Ellison, Larry's son, who now owns Skydance Media, Paramount, Warner Brothers, and is handing CBS over to none other than Barry Weiss, which if you guys remember, Barry Weiss, now we're, I'm going to be dating myself with this, but Barry Weiss ran a program called the David Project on Columbia's campus, which harassed and censored and got professors fired. So, who didn't present a sufficiently pro-Israel view. So now she's in charge of CBS. So yeah, great graphic. Glad that the Russians are even taking notice. That means we're really cooked.
We are. We're definitely cooked. I thought Barry was all about free speech. Wasn't that our whole shtick about free speech and free this and free that? Now that she has power, no free speech except for my speech, right?
My speech, yeah. You'll see. You'll see. The kids on the Columbia campus actually called it the Goliath Project because they were like bullying kids on the students. We're undergoing massive, massive surveillance and a crackdown on free speech. I did notice this lot. TikTok is going through and deleting old videos. I think Danny or Eddie has also reported some issues.
Yep.
Here's your last piece of nightmare fuel. Or, well, we have two more pieces. So here's one.
Apple's App Store has removed an application that helped to warn users about nearby ICE agent activity. The app was called Ice Block, and it allowed users to report sightings of ICE agents within a 5-mile radius. It didn't share personal information about agents, but was removed based on, quote, information from law enforcement about safety risks, according to the company.
What? I'm not a proponent of, like, Antifa. I don't agree with Antifa or whatever you guys want to call them, but I don't understand what's the issue with the app. And I think it's weird that Trump contacted Apple to get it removed.
Can't have anybody infringing on law enforcement in this police state, you know?
Not to mention a lot of these ICE officers seem to be deputized civilians.
Oh, yeah. You remember back in the day, we're going to date ourselves now. Remember back in the day, those little things that were in the car that would like beep if they detected.
Yeah, police, the radar detectors. Yeah.
It was the best. So anyway, like I remember people in my family had them and they would like hide them and then put them up there when driving on the highway and things like that. And it'd go from like green to red and everybody would slow down and cars were moving around. People flashing lights. All that stuff is now illegal, by the way, in many areas. They've tried to make all that stuff, I mean, already back then, but what I'm saying is that this is part of that campaign to continue to block. Like, you remember you police scanner radios? People used to, I had a friend who had one in the car. Yeah. They were just carrying one like with a CB radio. They'd also have a police scanner on, and they would listen for where the police were. And they used to have these wolf packs because there'd be one state trooper on in one area that would then tell the other one about cars coming up that they should watch out for. So they would like know where these things were. But this, now you clearly see that in this digital world, they're going to try to block all that. Like, no civilian oversight or information that the public can have access to. It's slowly going to be further and further restricted and constrained to the point where the police are going to show up at your door and you thought it was an Amazon delivery. That's how bad it's going to be.
I mean, look at what they're doing. You probably haven't noticed, you've been busy, and it really isn't that. It's not world news, but they're sending influencers down there. The influencers then either get into Antifa's face or whomever. So I won't name it. Fuck it. Nick Sorter went down there and he got arrested. I don't know if I didn't even watch the video of him getting arrested, but everybody who told me it was a very uneventful, polite, whatever. And he was released pretty immediately. This is after he had gotten into a confrontation with what they're calling Antifa. People at the ICE facility protesters, whatever.
I don't even know. There's no Antifa. Everybody's
anti-fascist. They're calling them that. The ICE protesters, I guess. Well, anyway, so he gets arrested and they release him. And immediately, what does our government say? We're going to do a policy review of our aid and stuff to Portland because an influencer from Twitter got arrested.
Yep.
Like, what is this war, like, road we're going down?
Not a good one. Not a good one at all.
You got arrested. Nobody really knows what happened. And instead of, like, you undermine the law for an influencer on Twitter who was down there to get clicks and likes and engagement, you're going to undermine your own police force. This is kind of wild, no?
No, of course it is. Of course it is. I mean, if you want to build up to a scenario of polarization increasing and division increasing, you're living it right now.
Well, it's a sort of like you're creating an us versus them. And the us is now the state and Nick Sorter versus a city police force in a major metropolitan area. That's a very interesting dichotomy.
You know, you want to know one thing? I really believe you're going to end up seeing, this is historically accurate too. You're going to end up seeing, this is my prediction. Ready? It's time for DD Geopolitics conspiracy minute. So you're going, I think that if you were to connect these dots, we have local law enforcement, state law enforcement, and then you have federal law enforcement, right? And with federal law enforcement, they also, you know, they are, you can think of the military in a similar, you have National Guard, and then you have the actual federal military branches. I believe that eventually the local police forces and even some of the state police forces will not be seen as trustworthy, which is where they will try to deploy their military assets to try to have further control. Why do I say this? Because police usually are coming from the communities that they serve, tend to have greater ties in those communities. And that's why even, I mean, people can look this up, even in other situations of fascist power, Italy, Germany, Spain, Chile, local police forces were actually seen as fifth columns.
Yeah.
And that's why gendarmerie, like they would have a militarized police force that would come in loyal to the central authority, not loyal to the locality or the municipality. Even they would take federal troops or national troops from other parts of the country to go to that area. Imagine now you have Portland and Seattle and you don't take police anymore there and give them power. You instead deputize or you bring in military troops from Texas and Georgia and Mississippi. You're going to have a very, very different set of circumstances with people on the ground. And I think that's what you saw during the border escalation. If we start to put the piece these things together since 2016, 17, when all these people were going there, these militias, and then the National Guard, they came from other parts of the country because people along the border are like, I have family on the other side. We have friends on the other side. I have a, you know, wife, kids, whatever. You see, this is where we should be headed. We should be watching this very closely, as I think that that's something to be very fearful of too.
I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. And lastly, for the remainder of the nightmare fuel that I have today, what came out, I believe I stumbled on it yesterday, a new FARA filing. They're all filing. You guys got to check these FARA filings every day, but FARA filing. You might not be able to see it here, but it is a company by the name of Show Faith by Works, LLC, out of San Diego, California, registering with the Israeli Ministry of Foreign Affairs. So they've just gotten a new contract. I believe it's for $4 million. I'm not 100% sure. Let me get the actual... I have the actual filing here. One second. I want you guys to take a look at this. If you guys have time, or well, I implore you to go look at this this presentation because it's really wild. Here we go. So here it is. This FARA filing with Show Faith by Works. Now, Show Faith by Works is a company in San Diego that is being tasked by the Israeli Ministry of Foreign Affairs. So if you keep going down, they're also targeting Christian churches and they're targeting colleges. If you go to page 34, it lists every single church that will be in this program. This is like 15 pages of churches. Just so you guys know, if you go to church inside of the southwestern United States, chances are you are now in this program, whether you know it or not. So especially you non-denominational, evangelical, there's a few Baptist churches in here. Might want to go check, make sure your church isn't on the list. So what is happening with these is they are going into a geofencing campaign. So there's a nice PowerPoint that they put together. They need to combat low American evangelical Christian approval of the nation of Israel. They're upset about the polls. Do you guys think that this stuff wasn't having an effect? It's certainly having an effect. What are their goals? large-scale Christian outreach and education. They have a contract. The college contract is not restricted to the Southwestern United States. They are in every single Christian college in the country. Every single Christian college in the country now. They have certain messages that they need to push, pro-Israel messaging and anti-Palestinian state messaging. And then if you go to page 67, you get the mobile October 7th experience. So this is great. A mobile setup that visits Christian colleges, churches, and Christian events that will highlight some of the atrocities of October 7th. It's so amazing. And they're going to be bringing us a complete virtual reality experience. Well, they don't need Charlie Kirk anymore. They've completely replaced him. Like, it's just, guys, and let me tell you what they're doing at these churches. They're putting in a geofence. If you don't know what a geofence is, go get educated. Israel's spending $4.1 million to brainwash U.S. Christians with virtual reality and geofencing campaigns, using conservative activist Chad Schnitger's firm to run the largest church geofencing campaign in U.S. history. They are hiring social media influencers, recruiting pastors, running continuous geofencing digital ad campaigns at churches and campuses. If you guys don't know what geofencing is, it's a digital marketing and surveillance technique that sets up a virtual perimeter, a fence, around a specific physical location. So if you walk into your church, you'll be walking into a geofenced area. Once you enter that geofence, you are then tagged. Their device is identified and tagged through location services, mobile ad IDs, and app data. Once the person is tagged, they will then be targeted with ads while they're inside the fence. And later, as they move around or browse the internet, they will be tracked over time. The campaign will follow that device after it leaves and continue to deliver it tailored ads for weeks or possibly months. And it will profile that device for further outreach or data analysis without the user ever realizing this. So.
Yikes. I mean, are we not already living in like a geofenced world in some ways?
Well, you're not in the geofenced world right now.
No, I'm
probably in the geofenced world.
You know why I say this? Because I know that there are people out there that have this experience. Like, you're having a conversation with somebody about something, and then all of a sudden an ad pops up about something similar to what you talked about. Like, oh, wouldn't it be nice to get a new crib for the baby? And then all of a sudden you go home and then there's like ads for cribs. And you're like, I wasn't even searching for a crib yet. This is all coming full circle at this point. Your Alexas, everybody was like, oh, I can talk to my wall and turn on the lights. That was all training the algorithm, training for free because you are, you know, zombie consumers. And Marx was right about a lot of these issues. And you just have people who are like, oh, it's a new technology. Why not? I'll use it without understanding the implications of that new technology.
Exactly.
And now look, you're going to have geofencing. You're going to be able to propagandize in new ways that you've never been able to do before.
Literally. Well, I mean, what we also found out is that this also leaked is that Israel had campaigns that actually targeted specific American lawmakers. So these were campaigns that just those specific people saw. They were for those specific people. So Larry Ellison is talking like, I can get you, he's talking about cancer treatments. What he's really talking about is other stuff, but I can alter your genes and make you specific vaccines and BBs over here. Like, I can make an entire algorithm just for you. You won't even know you're not surfing in the general algorithm.
I mean, our digital information won't even be safe. There's no, like, are there, yeah. I think about like Minority Report and things like that, Gattaca, all this stuff. I think about all these like movies, dystopian and whatever, about a lot of these different like avenues that we could go. But I just think about the future. Who's going to hold them accountable for like my genetic information. Like, we've given our information to all of these companies, Ancestry, 23andMe. Of course, people had to do it for different jobs and things. Now they have all this information. I want to pose a philosophical question because I studied philosophy as well. So I'm going to put on the philosopher's cap. Is our DNA uniquely our own? And if it is uniquely our own, in a legal question, is it proprietary? Like, for example, with this vaccine stuff, can Larry Ellison now have access to my DNA and then, for example, hypothetically, clone me or clone an organ of mine or use my DNA to enhance somebody else's DNA? I don't know, but I want people to be thinking, do you know that they were with, you know, that during the war, in the beginning days, and then during the ongoing genocide that's been happening, they were going to dead Israeli soldiers and like taking their sperm and
things. Yes. Morgan wrote an entire article about that. It was on our Substack. Yeah.
I'm just saying all these things are connected. There's stuff happening here. Human population research, genetic research, you know, I don't know, breeding. I have
finally got you. I've got you. Finally. This is it's all coming together.
Yeah, it's all coming together. It's all coming together.
Can you believe it? But by the way, to end on some levity, there's a Trump coin coming out. So you guys can get that if you want. That'll be fun, a Trump coin. I think he deserves a coin.
That coin is so bad.
It's so great. What do you mean?
No, the Trump head is okay. It's like, you know, it kind of goes with the style, but that fight. Come on, guys. There's not even they have the E Pluribus Unum, but we don't have anything else, like nothing more classical. It's gotta be, everything's become a meme these days. Not even coins are.
Oh my god.
In this world anymore.
No, I mean, you know, you just got to roll with it. You got to be like me. You got to laugh or else you'll cry. Also, guys, hopefully we'll talk about it on Wednesday. The HR 4779 is more horrifying pro-Israeli legislation coming down the pike. I think that's all I have.
Do you want to do the super chats?
Oh, yeah. Thank you for joining, Plate of Hummus. And Will, as always, and Stoshek, our brother, our Russian brother, Kosek's down. Thank you so much. Thank you all so much. We will hopefully see you on Wednesday. Maybe we'll give Chris Wednesday off because he's on his travels. If not, we'll see you on Wednesday. And then if not, we will see you on Sunday. Please go to ddgeopolitics.com. And buy shirts. There's no taxes. There's no tariffs. And the shipping is free. And they're funny. Go buy some. Yeah. Other buy some than that. Yeah. Go buy some merch. Get us out of the matrix. We got to get out of the geofence. We're geofenced in. Get us out. Bye, guys.
Bye, everyone.
Have your weekend.